Good morning and welcome to KRFY Morning Show's Garden Life, a monthly feature about gardening where every month we explore a seasonal theme with a local expert. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday morning, October 3rd. My name is Julie Perchinsky and I'm here with my co-host, Julie Calamine. Good morning, Julie.
Well, good morning, Julie Perchinsky. It's so nice to see you again on a kind of sunny, cool October week.
Yes.
What a way to bust into October.
Absolutely. It's going to be a beautiful morning this morning. Well, today's topic is fall planting and planning. And with us in the studio is Karen Olson. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Great to be here.
It's great to have you. She is our expert with Aster Designs and Sight Line Design. So she's a designer, planter, and planner. So
yes, ma'am.
Glad to have you here.
She's everything we need today.
All things green. Yes.
Fabulous. We picked the perfect guest. So maybe, Julie, let's start with the weather.
I think it's appropriate, don't you?
Absolutely.
Let's have a nice weather report, and then we will go ahead and get into this great interview. Well, folks, we've lived through a rather cool and rainy period, which has been great because our area needed water. But this week is shaping up to be what we look for in a beautiful fall time here around Sandpoint. Today, sunny, high 64, and tonight, low 44. Boy, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's almost the same, getting a little warmer every day. Wednesday, mostly sunny, 65. Thursday, sunny, 66. Wow, Friday, sunny, 68. And Saturday, a high of 72 and sunny. We've had rain. Things are looking beautiful in the gardens. And now we get a week of sun.
Dang. Wow. I want to hear that weather report every day.
Me too.
All winter long.
And great air quality, which is another thing that we're so happy about.
Yes, yes. I heard that the Canadian fires are still happening in Ontario, and they've got some air issues. So, gosh,
right.
Still going.
A lot of places around us are still smoky, but we have ended our fire season here, and I couldn't be happier.
Absolutely. So, now to Karen. Karen, why don't you take a minute and introduce us to your businesses and yourself and tell us a little bit about everything.
Sure thing. Well, we have two businesses. One is Sightline Design, and we're landscape architects, and we design people's yards, gardens, place their houses, design how their driveway approaches their houses, etc. And then Aster, which was born from me wanting really, really cool plants for design for Sightline, has all kinds of plants, anything that you would want, from edibles to natives to trees to shade trees to just really cool, unusual plants that are difficult to find. And I'm just a plant nut myself. I have a little collection out front in our parkway if you want to see some unusual plants.
Yes, you do.
Yes, and annuals, when that time is appropriate, you've got really just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've visited Aster Gardens, the nursery, and it always looks so healthy and good.
It does.
It really does.
You can tell it's a top-notch nursery and right down the alley from me.
We have wonderful people that just give it a lot of love.
Yes, and it's wonderful. Yeah. And also we should mention Aster Designs is an underwriter on KRFY, so it's so great having you on board and such a impressive business, really.
Our pleasure.
All right.
We love supporting you guys. You do a great job.
Well, thank you. So fall planting is our theme today. So I guess we'll begin with the easy questions is, what do you do in the fall?
Well, at first I'm thinking, oh, fall, it's over. It's time to rest. And then I started thinking about it. All the things I'm doing right now is picking pears, drying pears, making sauces, collecting seeds, just tons and tons of stuff, the nuts, drying the nuts, stashing, curing the squash. There's a huge list that I didn't even think of till you guys asked me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm making horseradish, all that stuff. It's just wonderful. It's such a bounty. And I didn't even formally garden that much this year. I had like three beds, but still the harvest, because the herbs came back, the nut trees came back, the fruit trees. So there's so many things you can grow that even if you don't have a lot of time, to spend on it, like most of us these days, we're so busy, you can still have a great harvest. you know, getting time to put it away is another. I do more freezing and drying than I used to do more canning and more complex things. And now I'm do a lot of things I can do quickly, but still wonderful to take out that pesto in wintertime, to take out that pie filling. I made apple pie filling the other night and just cooked them barely so that you still have that crispness to the apples, so you can have something that tastes like a fresh apple pie in winter. So wonderful. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the harvest is what you've been focused on.
It's the harvest. And then my daughter and I bond over dahlias. And I never used to be a fancy flower girl, right? I was like practical garden. If I can't eat it, I'm not going to grow it, kind of a thing. And then she said, Mom, you really should plant some of these. They grow like weeds and they're not that hard. And da-da. Planted them. And there's these Spartans that are like 8 inches across.
Wow.
Brilliant red, tons of flowers. They look like art. And I was hooked.
Yes.
And then I thought, oh man, now I got to dig them up for the winter, right? So, but she doesn't, she's a fancy girl flower. She digs them up at the right time. She puts them in clean sawdust, in containers, in a commercial refrigerator, and all this.
Wow.
I rip them out of the ground. I put them in some, those black plastic pots that you get at the nurseries, and in potting soil. And I put them on my garage floor underneath a canvas blanket. Water them a little bit once a month, call it good.
Wow.
You know, so things don't have to be, to keep things healthy and happy, it doesn't have to be like these things that you have to spend a lot of time.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. I lift mine up, but I like to wait till I have that light frost.
Right.
Before I lift them up. But I lift them up and get all the dirt off them completely. Mm-hmm. And then just put them in paper bags and in a closet.
There you go.
In an extra bedroom.
Yep,
yes.
That's a good way to do it, too.
And they come back very nicely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dahlias are really just one of the most lovely flowers.
Oh, my gosh.
I think they're worth it.
They are wonderful.
Yeah. Very impressive. And cannas. I also lift my cannas. And last year, I didn't have any luck with getting mine to come again, but I was reading that peat moss. Put them into peat moss and try and keep them a little moister, probably, than the dahlias.
Keep those bulbs from drying out. I just leave those right in the pots, chop them off, put them in a window. They come up when they're ready.
Oh,
dang. Or you can put them in a greenhouse if the greenhouse doesn't freeze.
Yes.
Right.
So.
Well, what other plants require a little bit of fall attention? I know some of the tea roses do, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. You want those, the grandifloria roses, they really... they're fussier than like your woods rose, your native roses, your rugosas, or any of your zone 3 roses. They'll get heavy winter damage if you don't cut them back. So I cut them back, you know, foot and a half, you know, foot and a half tall, and then mulch the heck out of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you'll be good.
Over but, the crown all the way up?
No, just on the roots.
Sure.
You can wrap things if you want, but then you have the danger of roses get all kinds of fungus and everything else. And you are holding that moisture on them, and it's just, you want to keep air circulation. So.
What about, what do you do for the evergreens, like azaleas or the evergreen azaleas or rhodies? Do you wrap them at all? Do you worry about the rims?
I don't. You could. You know, sometimes people are in areas where they get heavy snow and it can break branches. So even twine, tying those outer limbs to the main stalks will help with that. But don't make the mistake of wrapping evergreens too tightly, because it will kill the inner leaves. And then you'll end up with a bunch of brown leaves.
All right. And then I'm going to ask you a question about hydrangeas. And I know we have both Annabelle hydrangeas around and also PG.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really thought I was doing my neighbor friend a favor and just cut that PG. I thought it was an Annabelle, but it turned out it was a PG, and cut that sucker down to the ground, and guess what?
No blooms.
Right. Very healthy, very beautiful foliage, but not a darn bloom.
There's the hydrangeas that bloom on the old wood, and there's the hydrangeas that bloom on the new wood. So you want to check your there's a zillion varieties, and you know, there's, I'd like to give you a general rule for that. It's kind of like the bigger leaved ones. They're a little different. So the bigger leaved ones, more like the Annabelles and stuff, are generally older wood stuff. So, but that rule does not always carry through. So check your variety.
Yes,
we have a sign up in Astor with like all the different varieties. And then if it's blooms on the old wood, blooms on the new wood, it's this whole giant chart, which I don't even pretend to be able to memorize. That's why we write it down.
Very good.
So many varieties of everything. It's just... A question I had is, a lot of times my perennials get so woody that I don't know how they get, they die in the middle, but they're very woody in the middle. And then how do you revitalize that? And is that fall a time to do
like
that?
Like the ancient lavenders?
Yes.
Well, sometimes it's time to replace the plant. Mine, I do cut back pretty, you know, pretty well. And there's other kinds. There's, I forget the name of it. Anyway, it'll come to me. But there's certain types of lavenders that are shorter, the bushier, more broad-growing ones. They tend to get less woody than the Augustifolias, those tall, woody ones. So I have one tall, woody one that looks like a bonsai in my front yard, and I think it's cool. But but you know, a lot of times you just want to keep that bushy look. So you can prune them back every year, or you can get the kind that stay. You know, you get the ones that are 12 to 16 inches tall with that wide-growing habit, and they do that less.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah.
I like to trim in case it's going to break branches. You know,
yes.
How they can really
yes. They get
out.
Brittle
yes.
when they get woody like that. No, that's brittle. A great thing with woody plants, especially in the fall.
Do you collect seeds?
I do. Not a lot. I do. I have a lineage of Blue Hubbards that I just love. They're delicious. And then spinach and dill and parsley is about all I do. You can do a lot more. But those are the ones I have great success in. Anybody can have great success with those. So those are the ones I do.
And with squash and pumpkins and all those types of plants, you've got to keep an eye on your
right. They cross-pollinate. Yes, you'll get all kinds of interesting varieties.
Sure.
Yes, my Hubbards are way down in the far garden by themselves. So I just love, they're just right, really tasty, sweet.
And only vegetables. You're back to vegetables again.
I know. Well, we did a little flowers. Oh. We could do some trees if you'd like.
we'll do trees
yes.
eventually. I was just going to say, I save a lot of my flower seeds, like the Johnny Jump Ups.
Oh, yes.
And sprinkle them wherever I want them for the next year.
Poppies, calendulas, yes. All of that.
Yes, all of that. That's a kind
I
of
have
a,
brown-eyed Susans coming up in my backyard, and I'm going, where did you come from?
Yes. Yes. Oh, calendula, really.
Oh, yeah. It goes to town. Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about trimming perennials. You know, a lot of times when you read what to do in the fall online or anything, they say cut your perennials down and mulch them. What do you think of that?
I don't do that. You know, I'm not a fall, except for the roses. I don't cut anything back unless it's going, like, if it's super woody, like I have a lot of native plants, like sumacs and cranberries, and I cut those back because those are woody and they're going to get smashed by the snow if you don't keep them nice and tight. And then in the spring, they really leaf back out. I'll often just leave what I trim around the plant. And then other plants, they kind of self-mulch themselves. I found, especially like in penstemon grasses, if you cut them back in the fall, they will die often because they don't have that protection. They kind of grow their own mulch. And if you let that mulch settle down on the plant, it protects it. Mm-hmm. It protects that really soft, those very new shoots that are coming out. And then they're exposed to the hard frosts and the hard freezes. And then I go clean up in spring. And the thing is, when you clean up in spring, you're only going to have a fraction of what you would have cleaned up in the fall because a lot of it's going to be mulched in. Little critters have eaten it. Little insects have eaten it. The earthworms pull leaves down in the ground, eat those, you know, so they're turning all that into good soil for your garden.
Right.
So it's a win for everybody.
Right. And they're habitating it too.
Yes.
Living there.
Yes. It's a little ecosystem.
Right.
Yes.
Sure.
That's good to know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have to interject with a text in from a listener.
Oh,
people
boy.
Are listening.
Okay.
We've got listeners. From one of our really great supporters who's not in town at the moment is asking, this is Laura. Thank you for the question, Laura. Is it worthwhile to try to overwinter geraniums? And if so, how do you do it?
I do it. So what I did is I put them all in one or several pots, and I put them in my sunniest window, and I cut them back to about 8 inches. If you try to keep these, mine are huge, beautiful geraniums right now, but if you keep those over winter, they're going to suffer in health anyway because they want to be outside and they want to be in the full sun. So they're going to kind of, you know, they'll get bugs, they'll get aphids, they'll get, you know, they just yellow out and everything. But if you keep it in a sunny window and you cut it way back, they're going to stay healthier. Another way is to just let them go kind of dormant in your garage with minimal light. As long as your garage doesn't freeze, you can take, you know, cut them back, put them in your garage and just kind of check them once in a while and make sure they don't dry out.
So occasional, a little bit of water.
Just a little bit, once a month. You know, okay. Just don't overwater them because you will rot them in that where the in that climate where they're not using any water. Now, in your house, especially if you have a wood stove, they're going to be using water. You want to water them regularly like a house plant.
Because they're in a window and they
yes.
are growing there.
So I have already moved mine all into one planter. Okay. I have all my salmon-colored ones, my red ones, and my whites. They're all in one planter so that I'm compact. So it's not filling my house. You know, I have a little house. I don't want to fill it with a garden. But it's in one place. They're cut back. They're planted too close together, which is fine for the winter. They're well-fed, new soil. They'll sit on that sunny window and be as happy as they can be all winter.
Nice. That sounds great. Like an easy way to do it.
Yes, mm-hmm. And the advantage of an older geranium mm-hmm. can't be overstated. They double and triple.
They take off.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So beautiful when they
it's go. Spilling over. I have it on my little deck by my hot tub and they just are spilling over right now. They're beautiful.
I was going to mention too the cleanup that they also recommend is make sure if you have any diseases mm-hmm. or diseased
right.
plants or leaves or anything, they go out of the garden.
That would be the exception
yes.
to the leaving the mulch.
Yes.
You know, and especially if you have some kind of a mite. You know, the ones that get in the leaves, the blister mites or other kinds of rusts where the leaves, you know.
Yes, rust.
So that keeps that fungus growing there. You want to clean that up and get that out.
Do you prune any trees in the fall?
I don't. It's even the Arbor Day Society recommends that you do not prune trees in the fall. You can after they're dormant, but it says it makes them more susceptible to fungus and disease. So I wait until spring when their growth is going to kick in, the healing is going to kick in. If you cut it now, it's that open wound is going to sit there all winter. Mm-hmm. They're not growing. They're not healing. You know, they don't have that circulatory system to push things out.
So, Karen, what do you mean by springtime? Is that it must be before the buds start to burst
yes.
open.
Yes, get them while they're asleep.
Yeah, so February, March, something like that?
It will depend. So, yeah. Okay. February is pretty early. Usually March or April around
yes.
here.
Yes. Remember Kyle yeah. said he does it much later.
Yeah.
It surprised me how mm-hmm. late it was. Because
right.
January, February.
Still snowing. Yes. Everything's still fast asleep. Unless you get one of those years. Remember there was one year where we were planting bulbs in February.
Right.
It just keep an eye on the weather. And uh-huh. Use your judgment. If you see a bud starting to burst, you know, or getting full, there you go.
Yeah. Get moving.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you do, now what about soil prep? Do you recommend fertilizing in the fall?
You don't want to wake everybody up okay. in the fall. You want them to go to sleep.
Right.
You know, stay away from nitrogen fertilizers in the fall. So if you use anything, use bone meal, something really light and mellow. Sometimes you put some new plantings in and you want to give them a little boost like for springtime. But I would put that fertilizer when you plant in it just outside the root ball root. Where they can reach it in spring when they start to grow, but they're not going to get that right away and get excited and start growing and then go through the shock of winter. You know, you want them shutting down.
And what kinds of things are we thinking about planting in the fall? Trees, right? Trees, shrubs?
Everything. Right. It's the best time because you put them in and then in summer's the hardest time on plants here. They have to fight the heat, the dry. But if you get them... And it's all about the roots. If you get those roots in the ground and they'll grow a little bit in the fall and then in the springtime, they start earlier than you're going to want to be out there doing anything. You know, they're going to start a couple months and their roots start going to town and you're going to get a much healthier, stronger plant if you plant in fall. There's some very, very delicate little perennials, you know, maybe in spring is better that you want to keep an eye on. But for the most part, fall planting is the best
way to go. Yes. Hey, Julie, I think we missed a question on the outline about fall plantings, and that is your bulbs, which include garlic and
right.
flowers, right?
Yes.
Let's talk about them.
I'm one of the ones that will wait till the last minute and out there with my pick, you know, getting my garlic in the ground. But even that will work as long as you have some soil that's not frozen along with your frozen soil to put around your bulb.
Oh boy.
So I have gotten it in early at times, but oh gosh. But I mean, you can have so many blooms. I put in tulips and daffodils and garlic, and it's just wonderful in spring to see things coming up. That's one of my favorite things about gardening going around and greeting everybody in the spring and see who made it. And just, it's unbelievable how things can come up through that frozen, barren earth with such green vitality. It's just like, boom, you know,
right.
Ready to go.
And some of the first flowers for our lovely little pollinators, like the crocus will pop up and you'll see insects on them right away.
Oh, that's
right.
The buzzing.
Yeah.
Like the first thing that bloomed in my house is the plum tree. I have an Asian plum tree in my front yard, and it sounds like this humming. It's just like the whole tree is alive, and the little crocuses underneath. I love the fall crocuses. They get the flowers in the fall, and then in the spring they get the big leaves, and those are wonderful. And bulbs are so great because they come back every year. You can divide them. You can give them to your friends. You can put them other places in your yard.
Until the moles and gophers come.
That's where the Manx cat comes in.
A busy cat.
Yes.
Do you do any soil tests at all? Is that something part of your business?
I don't. You know, I am a landscape architect. I have soil surveys that I look at. And, you know, like I can look and see what kind of soil is where and all that. And anybody can access that from the USDA website. You can go on, you can put in your address. It'll give you what kind of soil you have there. You can look it up. It'll tell you all the properties, the drainage, everything. Super great resource. Our soil here tends to be just a little bit acid. So you'll put, you know, things that modify that in there. Bone meal is good for that. Any phosphorus type things, lime, that stuff, you know, but ashes from your fireplace. So I haven't per se, I think I did do a test once. I forget what it said. I'm just not very scientific about that.
but you know that you have all the nutrients and
yes,
you have what you need. Mm-hmm. In the soils.
And then you can add acid stuff. Like my blueberries, I know they want acid. So you give them peat moss. You give them coffee grounds. You know, so.
Yes.
It's sawdust and yes. All of that.
Needles.
Yes, pine needles.
Pine needles.
And we have plenty of those things.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty soon when they blow them all off the parks, you can pick up as much as you want.
Right, right.
And they're pretty.
We are resource rich here. You just have to look around.
Yes, that's right. Let's talk about mulches and compost. Mm-hmm. Do you have a big compost bin?
I have 3 compost bins, and then again, I like to kind of let it do itself. I have 1 bin for 1 year. I'll put everything in that, all the grass clippings, the leaves, the kitchen scraps, all of that, and then I leave it alone. And then the next year, I fill up the next one, and then the next year, I fill up the next one. I have red worms in there, too.
Yes.
And then I go back to the first one and use it. I don't turn it. I don't do anything to it. The worms do all the work. I just am not a fussy composter. It's just fine. Turns out rich and beautiful. Yes. That right before I want to use it, I go put a tarp on it for a couple of months so that it kills all the weeds and everything. Right now I have a pumpkin patch growing in there. So it's amazing how rich it and wonderful
sure,
it is.
Sure. Yeah. I can even use my compost that same year if I
if you
take the top off and dig underneath. I've got it at the bottom.
And if you turn it and do all those wonderful things, you can get it a lot faster than I do. But I'm not in a hurry. I've got 10 acres, plenty of room. I just, do it that way.
Let it pile up. I just had this thought as you were talking about your 3 compost piles. And the question for me came to mind, do people ever have like a more acid compost pile and a more base or not really?
You probably could do that. Depends on what you put in it. But a lot of times when things get broken down by the microbes, it's all going to end up the same.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I got that biochar this year and put it in my compost, so I'm curious to see what happens next year with the biochar.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a new thing.
That is a new thing. I haven't played with that yet.
Yeah. I have a friend who does that, so that was awesome learning about that. One final thing we have to say with the plantings in the fall is what about watering?
Just when it's dry. Pretty much it's a break now from watering. Isn't it nice?
Yes.
I have been a slave to watering all summer. But, that first rain, it was like, what am I going to do with my day? I think I'll make some pear butter, you know.
And one more talk one more question about mulching. We've talked about mulching some of our perennial plants right. and the tender ones, but is mulching just great for everything in the fall?
You know, different mulch for different things. If you're going to use an acid mulch, like you said, the pine needles, you don't want to put that on plants that don't like acid soil. So you want to put that on your rhodies. You want to put that on your, you can even put it on your hydrangeas. You can put it on your berries. You can put it on blueberries. Mm-hmm. But you don't want to put it on things that don't want, you know, the acid soil. They're not going to be happy. Then, and wood chips are great. I love deciduous wood chips on everything. And the only thing you have to watch out for wood chips is you don't want to mix them into your soil until they're decomposed, because they need nitrogen to break down and it will rob your soil of nitrogen. So straw, hay, great mulches. Those are good for your garden, you know, where you want your soil not be acid and it breaks down pretty quick. You can, it's almost like a green manure. You can mix it in the next year, because grasses are very tiny. They break down quickly, not like a piece of wood, you know, wood chip.
All right. That's good to know, and important information.
I think we've kind of covered all of the planting parts, and so maybe this is the time for a song break, Julie.
I think so. For those of you just joining us, this is KRFY, listener-supported, commercial-free community radio for the Idaho Panhandle, and you're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show with me, sort of me, I'm more the helper on this show, but mainly with Julie Perchinsky, and today Karen Armstrong. I'm so sorry, Karen Olson from Astor Gardens. I know a Karen Armstrong, and it just flows off the tongue.
There's an Armstrong maple.
Sorry, Karen. Sorry, both Karens. Anyway, we'll take us.
Good morning, Sandpoint. You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show with Julie Perchinsky and my co-host, Julie Calamine, here. And we have a guest in the studio, Karen Olson. We've been talking about planting, fall planting this morning, and now we're going to move on to planning. Karen?
Yes.
Design is an important feature in both your business, so is fall a good time to start your planning for the next year?
Oh, yes. Everything's fresh in your mind. You know, your successes, your failures. You can keep notes as far as what worked, what didn't work. Really like just kind of walking around and assessing, you know, assessing what, and there's parts of my garden I just love, and there's parts I just want to renovate. Like I just ripped out my front, you know, my front bed and put in something different.
Yes.
You know?
And I'll add that fall is a time when you can still remember what you have in your garden.
Yes.
If you wait until March.
It's like fresh in your mind.
Yeah. Yes.
It's fresh in your mind. So write it down, because in the spring, when the snow's still on the ground, you can't see anything, or you don't remember what did what, you know.
That's the beauty of the cell phone. I go out there and take pictures of my beds and kind of think about.
You could do a walk through video.
Yes.
That would be perfect. Then you could watch it in spring. Good idea. Good idea.
I've had to move my white phlox away from my hollies again, because they just encroach and get so huge and.
Things change and evolve.
Yes.
Like the one that I just ripped out is because I had a little tiny plum tree there. So I had sun plants. That plum tree has draped over the front of the house, which is wonderful now, but now it's a shade garden. And I've got those sun plants in there all stretched out and leggy, you know, and they're going, ah, so those need to move. So I moved those, put in some shade plants. Everybody's happy, you know.
Do you do a lot of moving in the fall, or do you wait for the spring?
I like to move in the fall. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice and cool. Nothing goes into shock. They're going to wake up spring and be happy and go to town.
All right. So. How do you keep track of what's in your garden on paper, or do you have a program? Or
I don't have it written down. I have a friend who's very meticulous, and she keeps fastidious notes, and she has a garden map layout. I have kind of more categories. So I have my berries. I have my nut trees, I have my fruit trees, I have my vegetable garden. So they're kind of in different areas. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, it's by placement, you know, not so much a map.
And Karen, of course, you are a landscape architect by profession, and so I'm sure you must have a lot of opportunities to help people who don't have as great, as wonderful memories or complete understanding of where plants belong, what shade and what sun. And that's where design comes in, and you, I'm sure you must provide, an outline, design, like a blueprint, basically, mm-hmm. yes?
Yeah, we do several things. So one is just a, like, draft a two-dimensional line drawing, which is just very basic. It's just black and white, has where things go. So it's a from the top-down view, like if you took an aerial photo of your place from the air. So that kind of a plan, and then a plant list and placement where everything goes. A big thing for me is not just the plants and where they go, but circulation. How are you going to get there? Can you reach things? Is it a beautiful stroll through your garden? Do you have little areas for to sit and contemplate and drink a glass of iced tea in the shade and look at all your handiwork? You know, those things to me are just as important as the garden, is that experience and being in your garden and enjoying your garden. I mean, I don't want it to just be like a vegetable factory, you know? Yes. I want it to be a lovely, I love like European gardens. They're like that. They wander through, they have walls. You come around and you have a surprise, like a statue or a sculpture or something like that. So I'm trying to create that kind of experience in my garden.
What about drainage? Do you look at how things drain or how
really important. So that's part of the whole functionality. So whenever I'm designing anything, it's always safety. Safety's first, and then functionality is second. Who cares how beautiful it is if it doesn't work and it's a swamp, you know? So always draining away from buildings, always, you know, at least a 2% grade somewhere so that you're going away from, you're not creating low spots, places where mosquitoes can breed, where it gets swampy and, you know, things get like water, you know, things will rot in the ground if they don't have that drainage.
Right.
Want it to drain.
So yes, of course, design, and that's what you went to college for as an adult, which is so great. but it is a combination. I know it's a, you know, it's a cliche, mm-hmm. but form and function, right?
Yes.
And beautiful design, and that's what you studied and practiced and installed here, and really sounds wonderful that you can create a bit of mystery, some outdoor spaces that are unique mm-hmm. that people want to spend time in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's paying attention to all those things. It's like light. You know, what your soil is, you know, how much sun do you have? It's definitely like a site assessment is what you do, and look at what you have, because you're not going to be able to do something that isn't going to work there. You need to just look at, you know, well, maybe you're behind a hill and you get, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours of sun in the summer, you know?
Yes.
So you have to plan accordingly. Look. You're going to have a shade garden, you know?
Look so, at it year round, yeah. Summer and winter, where and, light is.
Exactly. And then your soil type. You know, most of us have that mission silt loam around here. It's clay. So you want to either use a good soil conditioner, dig some of that soil out, mix it in. Raising your beds is the best way to do it because you have great drainage and you can put in some really nice topsoil.
Do you dig down to that hard pan and bring it up, or do you leave that and kind of work on top of it?
I leave it.
Yeah. I've done it both ways.
Oh, I know.
Bringing it up is a mistake.
Well, you just end up with a pot in the ground that holds water.
Yeah.
You know, so what do you want to do that for?
Yeah.
I used to garden up at Gold Creek, and it was granite and clay.
Ooh.
And I would just sit next to my shovel and cry sometimes. It's just like, oh my, what am I doing? And then I went shopping for another piece of property. I brought my shovel and I went to Samuel's and I dug, and it was pure sand. I said, I am home. No rocks, no clay. You just add organics, yes. And you're good to go.
Yes, you know. Good to go. In sandy mm-hmm. soils, I've heard of people putting like some kind of sealant in the mm-hmm. bottom of the hole so it kind of holds the...
Keeps it up there.
The water a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe something that was semi-pervious,
yes.
So that things could
like
get through. You don't want to totally block that drainage, but yeah, you could do something to slow it down.
And in the end, it is trial and error sometimes.
You
try things, and if it's not a success, what do?
Mm-hmm.
We try something else, right?
Right. And every site is different, you know, and in every level of care and attention. And some people notice things that other people don't, like... I'll walk through the garden and I'll see that leaf's brown, that one's wilting, that one. I mean, just like it hits me like this sensory overload, right? So I'm one of those people that can see that, and other people are like, what? You know? So, sure. You know, and my husband's going, what, you know, why didn't you take care of that? You know, it's like, well, I didn't see it, you know, so it just depends. And so people that see that, it's like, I don't need the schedule as much. But if you're not like that, you need a schedule. You know, it's like, how often does this plant need water? And then, but the weather is going to be dependent. So many variables. So it really keeps you on your toes.
Right. And, you know, for folks that maybe have large properties or are in retirement and, you know, maybe are in an economic state where they want to be able to hire someone like you, they would want to get in touch with you and have design planned and come mm-hmm. over and use you as a resource. But for maybe, for example, for a young couple who's just getting started out with a small yard, mm-hmm. what should they be thinking about doing for fall planning?
Well, there's no shortage of resources. You can Google anything. It's like having your favorite uncle live with you these days with YouTube and everything.
Sure.
But I just talked to a young couple that came in to Astor Garden Design Center the other day, and we just chatted. It reminded me of me when I was young, and they're learning, and then they're just so excited about planting, you know, this and that, and they're asking questions. And that's a good thing to do. Is there's so many gardeners, and there's so many people that know about growing, and we love to talk and share. So visit the farmer's market and chat with anybody, you know, the people that are there, the people that are the vendors, you know. There's an endless amount of workshops on herbs and gardening and everything around here. There's just no shortage of information. So you can suit, you know, whatever style you have, learning style. So if you like to look things up on the computer, you could do that. If you're social, you want to do it with other people, you can join a group or go to a class. You can read books, all that. And I've done all of those things.
Sure. Yeah, it's really a process as mm-hmm. we, you know, start as young people and begin learning. Mm-hmm. And some of those resources include the, one is the Native Plant Society, which mm-hmm. is a native plant organization, but they are a wealth of knowledge. Mm-hmm. Another one would be the Bonner County Gardeners Association.
Right.
Extension through the U of I is mm-hmm. wonderful. And I was just thinking, you know, if you really wanted to get going, you might just get a plot at the community garden because so many people know so much that mm-hmm. participate in that.
Mm-hmm. Immersing group. Yourself in those people, you know, that, yes. No. Yeah, there's no, we're so lucky here. There's so many resources.
Yes.
And such a great community and so many people that are willing to share.
And it doesn't matter how much you think you know,
there's always more. Oh,
so true.
There's this wonderful woman, used to be an agricultural extension agent at Christine, and she's just like an encyclopedia, and she's always bringing me weird plants. I love it. And she's like, brought me a compass plant this year. It follows the sun.
Whoa.
She brought me a gas plant this year. It, like, if you light a match near it, it goes, whoof, just the gases around it. You know, all these amazing edible vines, and it's just wonderful.
The gas plant is a great plant for kids because we had one in White Bear in Minnesota growing up, and what a fun thing for mom to take you out and light up a gas plant bloom.
The original burning bush, yes.
Yes, it's neat.
And they're beautiful. Those plants can live 40 to 100 years.
Oh, my gosh.
They get an incredible root system. And the flowers, I mean, everybody that's listening, Google it. They're just, the flowers are just stunning.
Wow.
Yeah.
One thing I did want to mention, too, is some, a mistake I made in my garden, is we have a wood fence that has really affected the airflow.
Right.
So we've taken a panel out and put in a cattle panel
the grid
in a couple different places just to get that airflow, and didn't have any mold or any powdery mildew or anything this year.
Big difference.
Yes.
Yep.
Every year.
So that's in that function category.
Yes.
Yes. And plus the grid, you can use that for trellises too.
Yes.
Your berries can grow up it, your climbing hydrangeas.
You use it all throughout your nursery.
It's
such a beautiful.
We like to be able to see through too.
Sure.
Yeah, and a little softer than a wood fence if you can grow some plants up that type of fence.
More
and
neighborly.
Most important, no maintenance.
Right?
So I have more time to play in the garden.
No painting.
Right.
Yeah, something I'm hearing throughout your discussions with us are that you are not into a lot of maintenance. I love that.
No. It's just, it seems like you're going to be doing the same thing. It's repetitious, and it doesn't really, I mean, doing the dishes is the same thing, but I mean, I would rather spend time creating things and doing new things and gardening and doing art, writing, you know, taking a walk, you know. There's so many things. I don't mind a little maintenance. There's some that's necessary, but to overburden yourself, to create a maintenance nightmare in your yard, then it's work. It's not enjoyment. And you want to keep it at a level where you're still enjoying it.
Yes.
You know?
A great tip. And mm-hmm. We hear this from so many of our Garden Talk folks that are guests that, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew as right. you get going. Mm-hmm. Start small and build, because it's not fun when things get overwhelming.
No. And start in phases. And then I went crazy at first, and I like gardened a quarter acre. I've got, you know, all over, and I'm reducing that now. I'm concentrating it. I'm so much happier because what I have is well taken care of, and I have time, and I'm not feeling stressed. I'm enjoying what I'm doing, and it looks better. So what's not to like about that?
Time spent in the garden too, as
yes.
your trees mature, your shrubs mature,
yes.
everything fills in.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend in Seattle that is now elevation gardening, where she mm-hmm. trims all her shrubs and trees up mm-hmm. and then gardens underneath and then trims all them up. Mm-hmm. And she's been at this place for like 35 years, and it's outrageous.
Oh my gosh, I'd love to see that.
It's neat.
That sounds
very
wonderful.
Neat idea. I think, is there anything else we want to add? Can we think of anything to continue the conversation, or have we finished?
We never finish. Sky's the limit with gardening.
No, but
literally,
got some great ideas about our fall planning and planting. It's given me several ideas. I don't want to overdo, however, so maybe we should mm-hmm. quit now.
Okay, well, let's thank Karen and Karen
thank
Olson
you.
From Astor Design Center and Sightline Design. Give us some of your contact information. Are you still open?
We just closed, but we're around. We're burying our plants and tucking them in for the winter, and you can come by and visit. We'll even still sell you something if you'd like, because then it's one more thing and it can go to Happy Garden. And we had a wonderful sale on Saturday. We got mobbed. Thank you for everybody that came. So we're tucking in, getting ready for winter.
Okay, and taking doing some design work too, I assume.
That never ends.
Yes.
So we're working on I think we have 47 big projects going right now. So I just up my staff. We have an engineer now, and also we are busy all year. We're very grateful for that.
So, well, note to listeners then, if you want to get in and get some design work done, don't wait till April. Karen's busy.
Give us your phone number and your web.
Okay, so it's sightlinedesign.net is our website, and then astorgardendesigncenter.com, and our phone number is 208-290-5410 the Sightline, for Sightline information.
And stop by if you're there.
Yeah, stop by.
Yes.
We love people
on
to come
Michigan?
In and visit with us. We're over on Superior, 924 Superior Street.
Superior.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we're going to wrap up this interview then. From KRFY, listener-supported radio for the Idaho Panhandle, this is the Tuesday Morning Show with Julie P. and Julie K., and we've just finished a great interview with Karen. Thank you, Karen. And off to a song. And then Julie and I will
thank
be
you.
Back for some updates on KRFY and what's happening around town.